For a species so afraid of death, we humans sure do love our murder porn. Isn't that a fascinating dichotomy? We take all the physical precautions needed to avoid injury and death, like wearing a seatbelt, installing intricate security alarms around our homes, and yet we love consuming content about violence and evil. We love gore, war, slasher films, and serial killer documentaries. I think a big part of this is our dark curiosity, and it stems from this question of, if these people are capable of committing such heinous crimes, is my neighbor capable of the same thing? Could I be a killer? What is it really like inside the mind of a killer? I don't exactly have the answer to that question, but today's guest might be of some help. Ashley R. Jones is a returning guest who previously shared a book she wrote about her experiences working in social work. And today, she's returned to discuss a new book in development called Just a Dash of Murder, a collection of murderous short stories. This is a different kind of episode of Lag Radio, because Ashley will be doing a reading of two of her stories. So, we're all very lucky to get this exclusive sneak peeks. Alright everybody, it's time to get real comfy, grab yourself a hot chocolate, and tune in to another installment of Lag Radio. Hey, Ashley. Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Busy. This is the fifth consecutive week. I've been trying to be consistent about every week carving out my Saturday to speak to folks in the community. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself. How are you doing?
Pretty good. That's good to hear. It's been a pretty chill week. I came back from vacation on Tuesday. Went to work Wednesday, ate till my heart gave out on Thursday. Friday, just chilled, saw some clients today, and have to see clients tomorrow. So, yay.
So it's been a pretty relaxing Thanksgiving break, I'm assuming?
Honestly, yeah, and I don't want to go back to work. I think it's been too relaxing.
Oh my God, me too. I'm dreading it. I'm hanging on to these last few hours. But you have a special surprise for us. You've been, last time you came on, we were having our discussion about social work, and you were talking about a book you had previously written, which is I Work With Fucking Monsters. But now, I was totally caught off by surprise. You are working on another book.
I am. This is more of creative writing, so it's completely, my imagination. So it has nothing to do with real life stuff. And honestly, I feel like it's easier to write something that's not real because you have full control. Mm-hmm. You can write whatever you want. And it's pretty much just, your imagination takes away.
I feel like that's even more daunting of a task. It's because then you're responsible for everything. So, all right, walk me through having written about your personal experiences and then now moving on to fiction, is this something that you've done before? Is this something that's sort of a new step for you? Why this move?
Honestly, I've always been into creative writing. As far back as I can remember, I was writing stories on the little notepad thingy on the computer, mm-hmm. to just writing down in notebooks. That's always just been my outlet. I've always loved writing, mm-hmm. but honestly, going and writing about a real life experience, it's a lot harder, I feel personally, because mm-hmm. you have to remember privacy. You have to remember certain things, and there could be repercussions of writing about somebody else's life that involves yours. So it's kind of you have to be a little more considerate when you're writing real life stuff compared to just creative writing.
Mm-hmm. You have to sort of consider the legal ramifications of ooh, maybe I can't really spill all this tea.
I heard when my book actually first came out, a couple of previous coworkers I worked with wrote me on social media and were telling me that the company was pissed. They were pissed. They banned the book from being on campus,
Oh
which
my
is
gosh.
fine. That's perfectly fine. And basically, they can't legally touch me for anything because I basically didn't name drop. I did not violate any kind of privacy laws. And I pretty much just went with my personal experiences. So they can't debunk something that personally is from my perspective.
Yeah, you just have to sort of keep hush hush and pretend that
Exactly. Which they're great at doing because they're
happen.
also shady.
So, speaking of working and dealing with shady people, your book is a sort of a change of pace. You said that you're writing a series of short stories. Tell us what the book is called, and what it's about.
So it's basically a collection of like some dark creative writing. I am a criminal justice major by heart. I love crime. I love everything dark. And it's pretty much a collection of murder stories. So it's like different areas of different kinds of murder. I title it Just a Dash of Murder because, it's short stories and they're all murder related. So kind of like a play on that. Each story has kind of like a different pace, either from the perspective of the killer or the perspective of the victim or like groups or just pretty much like a combination of each. The one that I really, really, really feel like is the meat of the story is titled Pools of Blue and Butterfly Wings. I have another one that's titled Mommy, You're Poison, but Daddy, I'm Famous. Woodland. I want to actually put it out to be 11 short stories and then go from there. Right now I have six. So it's just kind of like figuring out all these different stories and wanting to put out, making sure that the characters are well-rounded and the stories aren't just something like, oh, okay, so another murder. Just don't want it to be super repetitive.
So, are these based loosely off of like experiences that you've had or people that you've met? Like, how are you crafting these stories? Like, how are you crafting these characters? Is it like a hodgepodge of like, oh, like inspiration from this movie or this show or this book that I like? Or are you just doing it totally raw? Like, I'm just coming up with this shit like by myself.
Honestly, I have a pretty dark imagination, so it's kind of like off of the top of my head. I do watch a lot of like true crime documentaries. I fall asleep to like Forensic Files, so like a lot of the stuff is pretty much like, oh wow, that's kind of cool. Let me see if I can write something about that. The one right now I'm working on, it's like a group mentality murder. It's based off of this murder that happened actually in Pennsylvania back in like early 2000s, where a group of kids, murdered a classmate. So taking like a small crime like that and then creating my own characters, creating their own situations, and then going with a story, that's usually what I do. Like I try to create a well-rounded experience off of like bits and pieces of different areas in life.
So I've always been sort of fascinated by, I guess you could say, the personality types that are drawn to these genres. I mean, for me, it's like I mean, obviously this is I'm much more of an amateur murder horror theme kind of person. Like, I was really into Dexter. I got really into Mindhunter, and I love the genre, and I love sort of learning about the types of people that would do these heinous acts. For you, like, is there a I mean, it sounds so problematic to say you have a favorite. You have a favorite,
My
or
favorite
like,
type. Oh,
but
I could talk for days on
like,
that.
okay, so all right, so like. It, do you have a favorite, or are there certain types of either criminals or murders or whatever that spark your interest?
Studying criminal justice, we kind of got like all the gore and all the stuff thrown at us, and I loved it. Like we studied different types of crimes. We studied different types of personalities who commit these crimes. I would think me personally, my favorite criminal would be a serial killer. And even within that serial killer genre, there are different personality type. You have the organized versus the disorganized. Me personally, I like more of the organized, but then something about the disorganized personality catches my eye because they're unpredictable. Where, you can't necessarily come up with a pattern because, again, they're so unpredictable, but there's always a method to their madness. Like with a serial killer, there's always some sort of sexual component with that. Serial murder is a sexual crime. Usually it's committed by a white male. It's usually the victims are predominantly women, unless you're like Jeffrey Dahmer, who his victims were males. Like I have serial killer knowledge wrapped around my finger. I love it. I do. I love it. We could totally do a podcast on that. But it's just like, honestly, I like the gorier the better because you can even dive a little deeper as to why that crime was committed, what kind of weapon was used, and why that weapon was chosen. You can go into the personality type of the victim, why that victim was chosen, what component does that victim resemble in the life of the serial killer? Is it a woman? Does he have a hatred towards women? Is he obsessed with women? Is it something that, he's striving to be? Like going back to Hannibal Lecter, which one was that? It wasn't Red Dragon. I can't think of the first one.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yes, that one, where Buffalo Bill, he had a type. He liked heavier women. And he chose victims of, the heavier body type because he wanted to be a woman and he wanted to make a skin out of their body. So even taking it to that extent, you kind of like pick apart and try to, I guess, create the perfect, well-rounded character. So honestly, serial killers are my bread and butter. I love them.
Yeah, I remember I used to really be into that show. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Most Evil.
Oh my God, yes.
That was, oh
Yeah.
my God, like if that was like the Rolls Royce of
Yes.
like the
Oh my
way
God.
that they broke it down of like, oh, it's the 23 levels of evil. Oh shit. All right,
Yes. James
who's
Franco.
23?
Oh my gosh.
Oh
Yes.
yeah. 'Cause that's the first time
Yes.
that I've really seen someone evaluate these people on a scale of like based off of how organized it was or disorganized it was. And like you said before, people choose their methods, they choose their victims very meticulously. And I think a lot of times we try to talk about murder and violence as if it's this random thing, and anybody who does something, it's just random, and they just have this violent bone. But there obviously are way more devices going on play. So I, without I mean, obviously we can go into this forever, but I did want to start off with a reading of one of your stories, and then we can go ahead and go into sort of the process of developing this and publishing. So give us a little intro of what we're going to be listening to, and
All right. Sounds good. So this is titled Pools of Blue and Butterfly Wing. So this one is about a serial killer. He goes into, like, honestly, I feel like he's more of the organized serial killer type. His victim choice, obviously, are women for him, particularly. I like to think of him as the person who thinks he's the smartest in the room, but, he always lacks something. So he's not completely whole. I read this actually to my mom, and she was like, Ashley, you're sick. So I hope you can enjoy and appreciate my creative input.
I'm
So
excited.
it's a little graphic and there's some cursing. So enjoy.
All right.
Pools of Blue and Butterfly Wing. Mozart played in the background as the cigar smoke from my tightly wrapped Cuban floated in the air. I closed my eyes as the passion from the piano keys chanted their sorrow. I pictured the fingertips of a beautiful woman emotionally venting through music. No tears, just heartbreak through the speakers. It was a long day, instructing the young minds on a prestigious university campus. Tender young women waiting to be plucked at my disposal. a professor in ethics and morality who dabbles in death and the dismantling of women's lives, a true hypocrisy. The only relief I found for the day was knowing that I had a sweet martyr waiting for me, a bound beauty resting on top of a metal table. For the past hour, I watched her, watching her phase in and out of consciousness, alone, just the two of us in my study. Classical music bellowed in the background with violins imitating the sounds of butterflies, my mind wandering into a high so calmly my body felt weightless. Darkness encased the room, except for the hanging light above my lovely, blinding to her, but so illuminating to me. The bean highlighted her porcelain skin. I had to touch her. Slowly and quietly, my steps ever so gently brought me beside her. Adjusting the light, I watched her body tense up as she realized she was not alone. Faint whimpering sounds escaped from her gagged mouth, those full lips parted and stuffed with a cloth. I thought of you. Leaning to her ear, my lips brushed her lobe and those pools of blue widened in fear. I whispered, "Shh, don't be afraid." Gently, I stroked her cheek and combed her locks as dark as tree bark. My fingers twirled in her mane. Enchanting she was. Pushing myself back into the darkness, only leaving my frame visible to her, I retrieved the remote for the sound system. The music was lowered, and I removed her gag. "Please, please, please don't hurt me. I have a family, a mother. She can't lose me." She babbled on. Why do they always beg? It's so unoriginal and fucking annoying. So many women have begged to be spared, tried to bargain and lie about how they'd remain silent and never telling the authorities. I captured them because I wanted them. Why would I let you go? I kill them because I want to keep them. I've killed 22 women. Their faces flutter in my dreams like butterflies in a field of flowers. You are not my first, but my dear, I can promise you that you won't be my last. I shoved the cloth back into her mouth as she began to weep and squirm. As many times as I have killed, it never felt like it did my first time. A man always remembers his first. With each captured kill, I chased the first high, but sadly, it's never as fulfilling, never as right. They all look like you, smell like you, but they never feel like you. My dear Celeste, I plucked the life from you when I was the tender age of 15. A woman of 35, Celeste, you had so much beauty, but so little common sense. Ah, yes, I remember watching you from my window, you sunbathing in the nude, knowing I was there. Those bright smiles and low-cut blouses, you were begging for my eyes to wander. Your invitations to cut your lawn as you showered, trusting me to your unlocked doors, to venture through your home to inspect the drawers housing your unmentionables. Those lacy items touched by your scent. I slipped a pair into my pocket to remember you. This routine lasted for about a month until you caught me. Standing there in front of your dresser, three pairs of your panties hanging from my pocket, I watched the disgust spread over your face. You, standing there in a towel, still wet from the shower, saw my erection and did not know my intention. You turned out of your bedroom and began to run. I ran after you. The consequences of my actions could harm me, so it left me no choice but to harm you. Your long dark hair flowed behind you. I grabbed you by your locks and yanked you back. You collapsed onto the hardwood floor. I dragged you back down the hallway, kicking and screaming, your towel unraveled and left behind, revealing your wet flesh. Continuing to kick and flail your arms, I mounted you, my teenage frame holding you into place. Those rosy pink nipples matching those soft, full lips. Your full breasts bounced as you continued to fight, watching those pools of blue water as you begged. Your body squirmed, a detailed butterfly tattooed and printed underneath your right breast, looked as if its wings fluttered as you moved. I needed this to end. Forcing your arms between my thighs, I took your power. Your cries and screams went unheard from the outside of your walls. Wrapping my hands around your delicate neck, I began squeezing. Watching the life slip from your eyes excited me. After 6 minutes, your movement stopped, and the begging went silent. I penetrated you afterwards. The sweet moment of climax was the best moment of my life. No longer was I the awkward virgin. I had the most beautiful woman in death, and she was mine. Bringing myself back, it dawned on me that the gift of you was also a curse. I carry you with me, Celeste. 25 years later, I still wake up in heat sweats just wanting to relive your death. You haunt me. Every woman I select, hunt for, never compare to you. My excitement is limited, and my relief is temporary. Returning to my present, I thought about the various ways I could play with my new toy. I wanted something personal, intimate. I wanted to enjoy this. A gold chain hung from her neck and spelled out Lisa. Do you believe in God? I asked her. Still gagged, she nodded. Did you know, Lisa, your name is from Hebrew origin, meaning pledge to God? Tears continued to fall from those eyes. You know, it's been said, butterflies are little messengers sent from God whom carry secrets in their wings. Little angels from above who dance in the clouds and float above the earth. We try to capture these magical creatures of beauty in glass jars so we can keep them forever. Sadly, the magic dies, and our beautiful little prisoner is lifeless at the bottom of a jar. We dispose of the carcass like it never mattered because the magic abandoned us. All hope is lost, and we drive ourselves mad from the guilt and seep into a deep depression. The true magic appears again when another lovely creature catches our eye. We chase it in hopes of starting over. Women are my butterflies. I enjoy the chase and the pleasure of the capture. I brushed her cheek once more, and she continued to weep and jolt her body. She knew her time in my jar was over, and that I was going to end her magic. Welcome to the field, my lovely. The end.
Damn.
Yeah.
That was great.
Thank you.
I think what I loved so much about that story is how you portrayed in many ways how a lot of these serial killers, it's almost as if their everyday waking lives are just so droll and mundane and sort of just kind of a whatever kind of thing. And the thrill that they get from taking someone's life, like, that is sort of the sexual experience in and of itself. Like, it becomes like you're that, just like your story was saying, was, you know, it becomes this thing that you're chasing. It's kind of like someone who's addicted to something and they're trying to recreate that first high. What sort of was the influence for this particular story?
I actually wrote this original piece back in college because I was taking a creative writing class, and he wasn't as fully well-rounded, and the story wasn't as good. Mm-hmm. And my professor hated it. He absolutely hated it. I was kind of heartbroken because I've always wanted to write about a strong male serial killer character. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do something like that. And he didn't give me any kind of real feedback to kind of improve him. So I kind of just put this on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And just watching, you know, different documentaries, it's just wow, why can't I make a character like that? So, you know, a couple, maybe about a month or two ago, I kind of was just going through my old writings, and I wanted to improve this. I wanted this to be better. I wanted this to be polished. So I just threw on some Mozart and I started writing.
So I'm curious about your writing process, because, you know, I spoke with another writer last week, Cecilia Austin. And she is a journalist. I'm a copywriter. And, you know, I think it's so fascinating that as writers, we could all have this shared experience of what it's like to actually put your thoughts and your ideas onto paper or on a laptop. But the medium that we go about choosing is very different. You know, the experience of writing an article versus writing a book is totally different. And I've always thought that writing a book was just so daunting, because it's like, You have to have like this finalized thing, and then once it's done, like it's just out in the world. That's the version that everyone has. And I guess for me, it's like the thing I love about social media is that I always can edit or delete. So how do you structure like going about writing a book? Because this is, and you can clarify this, because I don't know how many books you've written. I know this is more than this is like at least the second one. How do you structure going about like, okay, I'm gonna write this book. Do you do it organically, just like, okay, I'm gonna write when I write and then it's finished when it's finished? Or do you set goals and like, oh, I need to write X amount of pages every single week? How do you organize this?
So when I wrote the first book, I was like doing some research because I was like, all right, I'm just gonna write it and then it's gonna be done. And then I kind of like started doing the research of publishing, like self-publishing, because no one wanted my book. And I was looking at the requirements. It's like, okay, so it has to have like 50,000 words. That's like 300 pages. I'm like, I have 8,000 words, so I have to like sit down. So I would kind of like, try to make time to write. And I saw a video, I can't think of his name, but he was great. He put out a video about procrastination, where he writes and he makes a video every day and he doesn't go to sleep until he finishes something. And I'm like, all right, that's a great philosophy to live by. And I've been trying it and it's a little hard. It's a little hard because it's a lot. Writing can be exhausting because, I remember watching Secret Window where Johnny Depp is like sitting at the laptop and he's typing and then he's like, oh, this sucks. And he deletes it. And I'm like, yeah, this sucks. I can't write this. It's just like, all right, this is terrible. So like I try to find moments where, I'm relaxed, I'm calm, and I'm feeling like, I want to be creative right now. Whether it be like, all right, I'm waiting for a client in my car as she's in an appointment, let me pull out my laptop, throw on some classical music and see what I can do. Or if I'm like in between like writing quarterly reports and I'm tired of reading progress notes, I'll switch off for like maybe 30 minutes and see what I can write. So I kind of like give myself time, but not enough time to do like writing every day, which I should, but I'm attempting to get back into that mindset. So it's a work in progress.
I commend you, because I've been trying to do that, trying to commit to like being consistent about your creativity, because like that's a hard thing, is especially if you're working, like if you have a 9 to 5, it's like, okay, well, I also have my art that I want to do, and sometimes like you're just too tired to do that shit. So you really have to set aside specific time to actually do it. But like you said, it's like sometimes you give yourself just enough time to do a little bit of something, but it's not enough. But it's not enough to do like the thing that you want. The main, and it's like that creative project that's just always in the back of your mind. Like, oh my God, I really need to work on that thing, and I really need to finish it.
Yes, like that's what I was like trying to convince myself. Like, let's have this done by the end of November, and here we are at the end of, and I still need five stories to
Gosh. All right, so let's say you finish the rest of your stories. What is the next step? Like, how, like from that point on, once you actually have a working piece, like who do you go to? Like, do you have to hire somebody to edit it? Do you how do you get this thing published? Like, what are the costs of that? Like,
So honestly, I exhausted myself trying to get my book out originally to all these editors and these publishers. Like I wrote like 80 different query letters and I either didn't get a response back or I got the generic, oh, thank you for your whatever you call it. But right now we're not interested in this piece. And it's like, I feel like maybe my title was a little, off-putting. No one wants to, it's a little intimidating. So I was like, all right, whatever. What can I do that's cheap or like almost free? And I have all of the creative decisions in my corner because a lot of companies, they want to dictate how your work is portrayed or they want to change things. And it's like, I fucking wrote it. I kind of want it to be
You
the
want to have
way I
creative control.
Exactly. Because, I put blood, sweat, and tears into this. So, I don't want it to be someone else's baby because this is my baby. So I started like Googling, self-publishing, and I kind of stumbled upon Amazon, even though Amazon is terrible in itself. But I went to Amazon Direct Kindle Publishing. So it was completely free to me, and
Wow.
I can edit it anytime I want. I can pull it down and I can put it back up. I can choose my cover. For this book particularly, I want to actually include pictures I've taken and kind of tweak them and put them in for each specific story. So I have the creative realm to do that, which is really nice.
Wow.
And honestly, I get like full control of how much I want to price my book and how much royalties I get after their take. So say I sell my book for 15 bucks, I'll get like 10 of it, 10 of the 15, which isn't,
Wow.
yeah, it's not terrible. Like, that's fine.
I mean, that's pretty good because
Yeah.
what is it like when you go to an actual publishing company that is making all these decisions of how your cover is supposed to look? Like, do you know what the payout difference is when you do it yourself?
I didn't get that far in the publishing through someone else. Like, but honestly, from what I've done my research on, it was more like, hey, there are also a lot of scammers out there who are telling you, hey, if you give us this amount of money, we can get your book published. And it's like, what? No. So, I
Gosh.
didn't even get that far. I still get letters or emails from this chick named Mary Flores about being interested in my book, but I would have to pay like $100 to $200 for my book to be published, which is stupid.
Oh,
Of course,
gosh.
I don't want to do that. So yeah, the self-publishing was the easiest and the freest method I could find, and I am definitely going that route again.
Awesome. And do you recommend aside from using Amazon, are there any apps or any other programs or websites that you find useful with, the whole process?
Honestly, I didn't really do too much research in trying to find other things because I was already exhausted. And once I found the one that was the easiest for me, I jumped onto it. Like, it was great because I could edit it right then and there.
It has everything that you need.
Exactly. Like, I have the option of being a digital copy or a book copy. I have the option of it being sold in stores that way or just completely being online. So
Wow.
it was easier to go that route. And honestly, it was so like stress relieving to find that avenue.
Yeah, I can imagine. I remember a couple years ago, a publishing company had reached out to me. And this was like in 2016, 2017, and they were offering to work with me to publish a book. At the time, I didn't even have a book. I didn't
Yeah.
even, and I was like, I don't even know what to write.
Right.
But I was always so like that was my biggest concern was like, what are the costs? How much is it going to cost to actually get it published and all that? So thank you for giving me that insight because that's something that I've always had on my bucket list to sort of write a book.
Yeah.
Do you happen to have another story that you might be able to share with us?
Ooh, okay, yeah. So let me find something else. So my other finished copies are stories. Let me pull them up. I have. I have Woodland, I have Wounds, I have My Dear Sister, and Mommy, You're Poison, Daddy, I'm Famous. Make your selection.
Can you tell me the names of the first two ones that you said?
Yeah, it's Woodland, Wounds.
Woodland. Let's do
Woodland?
Woodland. Yeah.
Okay. Wilderness. Or I'm sorry, Woodland. Wow. Completely different title. Will he find her? Hours swept by as daylight slipped away. She has been walking for hours, barefoot in the wilderness, her feet bleeding, her flesh burning. But she has to keep moving. She can't stop. She won't let him find her. Dazed and confused, the lack of energy has her stumbling over brush and tripping over her own feet. She hasn't eaten in days. The pain in her stomach didn't matter. She wanted to live. She faced true horror for months, entangled in the savagery of a human monster. Her flesh left with bite and burn marks. He branded her with scars to imprint the reality that she belonged to him. Could she ever go back to real life? The life she lived only 6 months prior. She was a carefree 22-year-old, hungry for adventure. Now, she only exists as a shell, brutalized and hungry for sustenance. Does he know she's gone? That she cut the rope binding her wrists? Rope burns glowed dark red and throbbed in pain. She was lucky. Usually he kept her chained beside his bed with a dog collar around her neck. However, he trusted her to be bound by rope this day. As she walked through the trees, nothing looked familiar. She was lost. Would she die here? Should she go back and beg for forgiveness? She wanted to scream, to cry, to bash her own skull against the rock. She must not give up. She survived his brutality, the torture and abuse, yet she didn't even know his name. He would make her call him master. Those swift steps, motivated by the sweet taste of freedom, turned into a slow and painful shuffle. The air began to cool, and her only covering was a ripped and stained oversized shirt that fell above her knees. Her attire was nothing like the outfit she wore the night he took her. That night, she was dressed in a tight-fitting mini dress, high-heel stilettos, and a cloud of innocence. It was a Saturday night. Now, she had no idea what day it was. She struggled to remember her real life. She wanted to cry. Oh God, how she wanted to sob and fall apart, but she couldn't. The wilderness of Pennsylvania could conceal her. The darkness of the woods could consume her. She must not stop. Her cracked lips and dry mouth felt like sandpaper compared to her days of fruit-flavored lip gloss and expensive lipstick. Twigs broke beneath her feet as she stepped, hoping not to bring notice to her presence. She could feel the mosquitoes biting at her bare skin. She slapped them away as she continued to walk. But slower and slower she went. She rested against a tree and closed her eyes. All that flashed through her mind was an intense thirst. But wait, she heard water. She opened her eyes and moved her head in search of a river or a spring. She closed her eyes to listen, and seconds later, she stumbled in the direction of the water. The faint sound of running liquid led to a powerful stream, water running and crashing against rocks. Falling to her knees, she crawled through the grass on all fours, weakness taking over her. Her tongue brushed against the inside of her cheek, burned. No saliva to swallow her excitement. Leaning over the water, she saw a calm patch, and the sight of her reflection startled her. Sunken face, exposed cheekbones, and dark and dead eyes. Who is this person? Without hesitation, she cupped her hands in the liquid, scooping it to her mouth. She took it in. Gulping it down, so crisp, she wanted more. It slithered down her dry throat. She continued until she got her fill. She splashed her face and rubbed it over her skin. The dirt began to lift and run like veins. Her damp shirt clung to her. She fell back, seated on her rear, tears forming. She cupped her face. She can do this. She needed to keep going. She could live and be a symbol of hope. Eyes closed, she wiped her face. One more drink. And I'll continue, she thought. This was her escape. She leaned over the water, and with her hands cupped, she opened her eyes. She began scooping more and bringing it to her mouth, sipping and seated on her knees, continuing to drink. Moments passed as she looked in her reflection. To her horror, he stood behind her. How did he notice? How did she not notice him creeping up behind her? How could she be this stupid? Liquid from her mouth released and began to run down her chin as she began panting. Tears formed. She began using every ounce of energy she had to scramble to her feet. He wrapped his arm around her neck, tucking her into the dip of his forearm. He leaned back and began squeezing. She clawed and struggled, trying to gain her freedom. He lifted her up as he stood, and her body stretched out, gravity pulling her down as he held her neck. She gasped for freedom and relief, wailed her body. He only squeezed harder, squirming for air, for freedom. This was the end. Crack went her neck and limp went her body. Her feet dangled an inch above the ground, her toes grazing the grass and dirt. The episode only took about 5 minutes. She lasted longer than he thought she would. He released her body and she fell limp to the ground, a thud as she hit the solid earth. This was his favorite part, the hunt. Number 11 didn't disappoint. It was fun while it lasted, but the cleanup needed to happen. He grabbed her ankles and dragged her body across the terrain. He had picked her gravesite ahead of time, a spot between two tall trees. He began to dig, unearthing the dirt where she wouldn't be found. If she had simply just kept walking, she would have found a busy highway only a mile away. She could have lived. After digging for some time, he scooped her carcass and threw her into the casket of earth. As he began covering her, the thoughts of what he would do to victim number 12 floated through his mind, bringing a smile to his face. And.
That was incredibly vivid. but, you know, I actually really appreciated that it was told from the victim's point of view. And actually, it made me want to ask if in writing you gravitate towards writing about people who were serial killers, how would you define the types of victims you like to write?
Honestly, I kind of have an array of victim choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one I'm working on and trying to finish this week, the victim turns into the killer. Mm. So it's kind of like each person has like a different flaw in them. So mm-hmm. I like to honor a victim, but then also I kind of like to watch them grow and kind of go into their own darkness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the victims, you know, they're not necessarily all women. They're not, you know, the killers aren't going to be all white. So it's kind of like everybody's different.
Yeah.
So I don't do the whole stereotypical young, naive woman.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The victim. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. 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 Because you want to portray the reality of, like, you know, these decisions of who is the killer and who they are killing really is a mixed bag, and it isn't always going to be, you know, this lumbering dude who's going after, you know, like very weak and meager people. And sometimes people have like very meticulous reasons why they're going after certain victims.
Exactly. Like, honestly, I could see her being the same victim in the first story. Like, she's the same type. But I don't want to stick to that stereotype of victimhood. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of want to play along and see what else I can find.
So, okay. So here's I feel like this is more of a, I wouldn't say spiritual because I'm not really a spiritual person, but, what do you think it says about us as people, when we have this like fascination about these grim subjects? Like, well, you know, why do you think we love watching movies and reading books about these topics that, you know, otherwise are horrific and, yeah, you know, like we, yeah, would never want to be able to imagine that we'd go through these things? But it's like, okay, I have a coworker who loves, you know, crime podcasts. And, you know, I really got into, like, you know, watching Serial. And so, like, why do you think we have this fascination and this relationship?
Honestly, like, as far back as I can remember, I was watching stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think my fascination with crime happened when I started watching, like, Scooby-Doo. The whole idea of mysteries. And, you know, my dad and I used to watch horror movies. It started when I was 7. Mm-hmm. So the early exposure. And then my mom also, we would watch crime shows every night growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm,
Law and Order, I've been a ride or die fan since, since I was born. Uh-huh. I watch Forensic Files all of my life. I can fall asleep to them and dream peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, that's just a part of my life. Like, so it made sense to go into college and study crime because it's my interest, just like someone's interest is in science or math. It's just, it makes me tick a bit. So it's just like when you have the right personality and you're not like a creep, it works. But sometimes like my interests come off a little creepy. When I was in college, I interned with the coroner's office. So I got to go to crime scenes. I got to experience death calls and see different types of death. Personally, it didn't affect me because, it was just like, wow, this is, part of life, even though it's like a homicide or a suicide or an accidental or a natural. It's just like, it comes with a territory. And it's just like the thing for me, it's fascinating to understand or try to understand why these things happen. Like, I've always wanted to know why. Like, surprisingly, I'm not a psychology major, even though I like the idea behind darkness and
In the
people's
psychology of all of
intentions.
this, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's fascinating. Like personally, I think one of my goals is I want to work predominantly with criminals because I want to know how the mind works and I want to know why they do the things they do because it's interesting. I think we become a little desensitized to it, but also I think the interest in these dark issues have always been around. It's just people are more open to learning about it and learning and enjoying it. Well, not enjoying it, but finding entertainment in the field of it. Because, back in the 50s, if you were like, oh my gosh, I love things about crime, people are going to look at you weird and laugh you up. So I think it's more accepting, even though my mother is right there in the background and she's looking at me all weird when I tell her the things I like. So yeah, it's just like I think it's more accepted. So we are open to being able to enjoy the things that we enjoy.
So having been around these crime dramas, and you're sort of a veteran of this whole entire sub community, or this community of people who are just really fascinated by the subject. What would you say is like the most overrated crime TV show or movie or whatever? And then what would you say is like the cream of the crop, like the ooh, like this is the gold standard of like how these narrative should be told.
Okay, so I think the most overrated thing, but I also enjoy it, is let's say Criminal Minds. So I took a criminal profiling class in college. The show portrayal is not the same thing. Those profilers are not in the field. They're not talking to all these people. They're not going out to crime scenes. They're given evidence and all the information, and they really don't leave a lab. So they're pretty much kind of like, okay, so this is the information you're giving me. Okay, this is the documentation. I'm going to look at this and I'm going to create a profile for you. Whereas, like Mindhunter, it was an accurate portrayal because that's exactly how it happened. This guy who got too close to serial killers, who wasn't supposed to be doing the things he was doing, discovered a science that we use now. So it's just kind of like, yes, finally something that's great and we, can actually see it that way. Whereas like another good one would be, ooh, like, have you seen You? It's on Netflix.
I remember seeing like the poster for it. What is it about again?
So it's about this white guy, this dorky, nerdy white guy who's kind of like an outcast, kind of quirky, and he's an obsessive killer. He finds this obsession over this basic ass white girl who I wanted her to die because she was just a terrible character. She was such a Becky. She was such a Becky. And so basically, he manipulates the whole situation for them to get into a relationship. And he is obsessive. He's also, he stalks her and he gets what he wants eventually. But there are different things that come into play and you find out he has a really dark past. So it's a really good show. It's a little slow, first couple episodes, but it's really good. And season two is going to drop, I think, 2020. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Mindhunter. And first, like, when I first like found out about the concept of it, I was totally in love with it, and I totally love this idea of starting the timeline at, you know, hey, this is when there was this shift in the way that criminal justice was sort of looked at, because at the time people didn't really have a concept of what a serial killer was. And I love that they added this conflict of, like, society hadn't caught up to the trend that was going on. And it sort of reminds me of a lot of what's going on right now with the, you know, the radicalization of a lot of young men who go and go on these shooting sprees. I guess this is sort of a random question that I've just thought about right now, but from someone who observes a lot of these violent people, and you know, you've seen all shades of these different criminals, what's your take on why you think so many of these young men, you know, go and shoot up public places? And, you know, what do you think prompts them to get into this thing? What would you assess to be the overarching thing that connects a lot of these dots?
Honestly, there's a missing of red flags. Definitely a lapse in people prioritizing mental health. If your son is making comments about, you know, I don't want to be here anymore and I hate Johnny at school, maybe you should talk to him about Johnny and find out why, you know, him and Johnny are beefing. So it's kind of like, we're kind of like, I kind of see it as we're leaving the era of the serial killer and moving into more of the mass shooter spree killer. The mass shooter is usually just one incident, multiple victims. Whereas the spree, you think of the DC sniper, where a crime will happen, they're all linked, but they happen in different locations, different times. Whereas the lone school shooter, white male, it's happening one time, because obviously usually he dies right then and there, or he'll be taken peacefully into custody because, you know, he's no longer a threat. So it's more like, you know, we're missing a lot of the red flags. So let's say the whole fascination with, you know, crime and murder and stuff could be a red flag. It could be in some aspect, but people who have done the whole spree shootings and killings, they use a lot of their references and their inspirations as Columbine. They want to outdo Columbine. Columbine wasn't the first mass shooting in America, but it's the most iconic one.
Yeah.
Because you had two loners who were bullied, but also had bullying tendencies as well. You had, you know, social media in its really, really, really early stages. You had, you know, they were blaming, like, music also.
Yeah, like music and video games and...
Yeah, like, honestly, I've played violent video games. I watch violent shows. I'm not violent, but I'm not going to use that as, you know, maybe that's something we should not look at. But let's look at that, you know, we become so desensitized sometimes where, you know, we don't necessarily see the reality of things. Like, if someone's sitting there and, you know, they're taking pleasure in hurting other people, that should be red flag we look into. You know, I think just paying attention to things. And honestly, I would rather much make someone's day a little more difficult than have to deal with another, like, mass shooting because of a red flag was not followed through.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like the conversation of mass shooters is so often focused on, like, maybe one aspect of mental health. Like, they don't even want to cover the broad spectrum of mental health related topics, like you were saying about them actually being bullies or them actually being bullied, because you have a lot of these young men who, like, you know, obviously everything that they've done is absolutely unacceptable, but I think it's also worth thinking about, like, what was their particular environment? Why did they choose to shoot up that particular location? Because we only ever really talk about those small aspects of mental health or maybe, you know, gun control. And like you said before, like, I think there are so many red flags that we're just not taking a look at. And even you mentioning about music and, you know, violent video games and movies and stuff like that, because for the longest time, like the conversation was always split into two. It's like the boomers who are saying that, oh, it's because of the violent video games and violent music, and let's blame, you know, Marilyn Manson and, you know, whoever, Slipknot. And then you have the people who are saying, no, absolutely not. It doesn't really do anything. But I think there's also room for another argument, which is, you know, maybe we should look at this. Not to say that, you know, video games are a direct link, like, oh my God, you play Halo, you're going to just start like shooting at people. But I think it does bring up a much needed discussion of like what role, if any, does media have in influencing these young men?
Yeah, like honestly, white men are dangerous in America. They are dangerous. Like, you're more likely to be killed by a white American man than anything else. All of our serial killers have been white males. All of our domestic terrorists have been white males. So it's pretty scary out there. It is.
Yeah, and I also think and that the prevalence of them all being white men really is speaking to another larger issue, which is, you know, I feel like a lot of younger white men are have identified for so long being the, you know, de facto owners of this country, and you know, as the United States becomes more diverse and there's a lot more people of color, I think a lot of white people just have this anxiety, and a lot of young white men feel like that was the only part of their identity. There really isn't anything to their culture. And so I think a lot of those guys try to find communities, and for the ones who are picked on and left out, like they just have nothing. And I'm not trying to like sympathize with these guys and be like, oh my God, I love them or anything like that.
Course
But
not.
I think it is interesting how, I mean, throughout history, like so many of the people who go on these mass shooting sprees or end up being serial killers, predominantly white dudes.
Exactly. And it's just like, you know, they always bring up black on black crime, whereas, you know, majority of people who are perpetrated on are perpetrated on by the same are the by the same ethnic group. So, you know, white males are more likely to harm other white males. So, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, no one ever really addresses that.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
like looking into crime statistics and stuff like that is just, you know, there are statistics, people. You can't just look at half, how to look at all of it, you know.
Exactly.
But honestly, they think definitely the serial killer is fading out because of technology and, you know, advances in science such as DNA. You can't do nothing now. You
Oh
know,
yeah, they will find you.
like what is it? It's the Locard theory of exchange. You will leave something and you will take something with you everywhere you go. So when you go to a crime scene, you're going to shed hair, you're going to shed skin, saliva, blood, all of that. And you're going to take pieces of the scene and the victim with you. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to do that. So, honestly, the era to be a serial killer would have been during Jack the Ripper. No cameras. No
That's
cameras, no technology.
yeah, that's another thing that's really interesting is like, you know, I remember watching I can't remember what the show was, but like they were talking about how, you know, you really do leave everything, like whether it's the your shoe print, whether it's your fingerprints, whether it is like your eyelash hair, and it's wild. Like they'll, I mean, obviously this is a great thing, but like you said, you know, if you wanted to be a serial killer, fortunately, you're now
Time
is
has
not the
not
time.
come.
Well, actually, before I let you go, can you tell us where we can find your work, and when we can expect, hopefully, the ballpark
Yeah.
of when we can read the
Honestly, I want to say January 2020. It will be on
book?
Amazon. It will be on Amazon January 2020. Honestly, I'm thinking about putting it under my name, or I was thinking kind of like a pen name. So my name is Ashley R. Jones. That's probably going to be what it's under, but I'm also exploring like the pen name. So, you know, the pen name would most likely be Senoj, Senj. Wait, oh, I'm sorry. Senoj. So Senoj is basically just Jones backwards.
Cool, cool. I love it.
Thank you. So I'm thinking of that. So I will definitely keep you updated about, if it's going to be under my name or not. But the title is going to be Just a Dash of Murder, aka Jadom, Jadom. So again, January 2020, I'm hoping, and it should be under Amazon.
Awesome. I can't wait. When it releases, definitely let us know. We'll let the whole LAT community know about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Actually, it was a pleasure. I always love having you on here. You're always so great to talk to.
You.
We'll definitely chat some other time, okay?
Great. Have a
All
good
right.
night.
All right, take care, Ashley.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another installment of LAG Radio. LAG Radio is an independently produced podcast recorded and edited here in my home office, so I appreciate any and all support. Whether you share this podcast with your friends on social media or sign on to become a sponsor, there are plenty of ways that you can help out. Speaking of which, if you're a small business owner or a person of color who wants to promote your platform, business, or brand, contact me and you can become a sponsor of LAG Radio. We'll have you sponsor some of our episodes, and you can even join on to be a guest of the show. If you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can find LAG Radio on anchor.fm/lagradio, or you can listen on any major podcasting app like Google, Spotify, or Apple.